Revolution Radio of freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well, now you've got it.
Red, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyal? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given rights, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Thanks for listening. Why don't we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now, we're going to get back to your host.
All right, awesome. The host is here.
Now, go ahead. Cool. That's a good start, isn't it? So, I don't know what's going on with that. I'll sort that out in a little bit. But I'm playing with the format today just a little bit. We're almost at the three-year anniversary of this show. It started on the 10th of March, 3 years ago. So I'm kind of counting this one and next week as the anniversary shows. So I'm messing about, and trying some new things, and working out what works and what doesn't for the next 3 years. So here we go. We start with this. All right, that's weird. Why is that not working? Oh, yeah. Let's do that again. What's going on? Okay, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. It's just after 11 o'clock in the UK, and when you're hearing this, it'll be just after 11 o'clock in the United States on the East Coast. You're listening to Free Association on Revolution Radio. My name's Dennis, and I thought I'd record the monologue because it'll be easier. So I'm in the central station, I'm in destination 1850 again. Just for a change, I'll see if this routine works, and if it does, then I'll stick to it. If I do the show, part of the show live here at 11 o'clock, and then part of it live at 11 o'clock on the East Coast. And that way I don't have to think too hard about half of it. Something like that. That's the theory. So I was having a conversation on Thursday about my monologue, which I didn't have any kind of topic for at all. I don't really do monologues, but I'll give it a shot. I usually make an attempt at it, even if it doesn't quite work. So I was having this conversation with a couple of people sat around the table, and we were talking about how many people are unvaccinated. And according to the official government sources in the UK, it's about 18% here. According to the BBC survey that happened sometime in the middle of the pandemic, it was about 23-24%, something like that. So it's somewhere between those numbers. So we could be 25% if we're optimistic about it. So I'm going to assume that we're about up 25%, because that gives me something to work with. So you're thinking about it, 25% isn't bad at all. I think it's a lot more who are unvaccinated in the States as well, but 25% here, I'm thinking specifically about the UK. That's 25% of people who will say no, who are prepared to say no even if there's social pressure, and even if there's government mandates, or even if there's like huge pressure to don't kill granny or whatever, 25% of people will still say no. So we know we can work with that. That's an amount that's workwithable. And they're visible people. They're people who aren't afraid to speak out. They're the people who turn up on the Tyne Bridge on a Friday afternoon with placards, which was me yesterday as well. So that's the unvaccinated figure. Well, speaking of the Tyne Bridge, we were protesting. I was protesting again yesterday. It's the first time for a little while. And instead of picking a board about vaccine injury, I picked one about Agenda 2030. So resist Agenda 2030 or be a slave, it said on this board. I thought that was quite direct. And I was the first one out on the bridge, so it was easy to see whether or not it was making an impact, and it made an impact, definitely did. Lots of thumbs up, lots of people making beeping noises as they went past, with just me on the bridge with one sign. And we got to about 20 people yesterday, something like that, by the time I left. I did an hour because it was cold, so I did an hour with the boards and then walked home. But it was an interesting response to me, because I thought sticking with vaccine injuries was a good policy, but apparently Agenda 2030 and 15-minute cities get a very positive response when you complain about them. So that's just a thought for anybody who might be organising a demonstration or doing something similar. That 15-minute cities, people don't like them. And there's no baggage with 15-minute cities or Agenda 2030. At the moment, there's been no social pressure. There's no official, there is an official government agenda, but it's not a propaganda agenda. But people recognised the topic, and there was lots of thumbs up in cars. Quiet people just putting their thumbs up, waving, clapping. People clapping out of the window as they were driving past. That's never happened with the vaccine stuff, but it's happening now, and I think that's a remarkable shift. And I think that we can use that change in perception, and we can develop it and channel it, and it'll become something important. It'll become something big, because 25% is where we're starting from. So it'll be relatively easy to get another 25%. Looking at the response yesterday, it's going to be very easy to get another 25%. If we get to 75%, then we've won. Because the MPs won't be able to ignore it.
local councils won't be able to ignore it. If people just don't pay their fines and ignore the rules and don't pay your fines is the basic policy. It's just like, ignore it. It's nothing to do with me. I didn't make the rules. I didn't agree to the rules. I didn't agree to the fines. I didn't agree to pay the fines. So no, I'm not doing it, basically. And I think that's the approach we've got to take. It's just non-compliance at every step of the way. Every single step has got to be just no. Nothing to do with me. Your problem, you sort it out. And I think that's the only way we can deal with these things. It's like the technology, I didn't agree to it. I'm not agreeing to it. It's like I've got this issue at the moment with Universal Credit, which is the welfare system in the UK, where they were insisting that I switch on two-factor authentication to get a code sent to my smartphone so that I can use the system. So you've got a username, a password, and then you get a code sent to the phone before you can log in. Well, my phone died about 2 or 3 weeks ago, from which point I haven't been able to access the Universal Credit Journal system. So anything that they ask me to do, I'm not going to see it because it's done through the journal. Any changes in appointment times, I'm not going to see because they do it through the journal. So not having access is a major thing. And not having access affects the quality of my interactions with the people in the job centre. So it has to get sorted out at some point, but I'm not buying a new phone. If they want to buy me a phone, then they can buy me a phone. If they want to pay the phone bill, they can pay the phone bill, and then I'll have two-factor authentication. But I haven't agreed to two-factor authentication. I ticked the box because the system kept asking me to tick the box. But that doesn't mean I've agreed to it or I want it. It just means that I'm doing what the system tells me to do to make my life easier. And of course, it made my life more difficult. But that's the way the world is at the moment. So I'm not completely sure how to beat the new world order, but I know how to beat the system. It's non-compliance. So if I don't buy them a new phone, if I don't give them a new phone number, they're going to have to buy me a phone. If they want me to have two-factor authentication, they're going to have to buy me a phone and pay the bill. At which point I'll go along with it. But I'm not paying for it out of my own limited amount of money because I don't have a budget for a smartphone anymore. And I'm not replacing it. It's just not something that I need to live my life. I can live my life without a phone. So that's it. That's the way the world is. All right, this is me live again. So I recorded that this morning because I'm messing about with formats and bits and pieces, and I've got this PodTrack P4 gadget that I need to start using. I've been carrying it around with me for the last couple of weeks, and I'm recording all sorts of stuff, and I hadn't figured out how to transfer it over to the laptop until today. So I thought I'll use if I record a monologue the morning of the show, then it's kind of capturing my mood and my thought process and everything like that. And I find it easier just to talk when I'm having a cup of coffee at Destination 1850 than when I'm doing it live. So it kind of makes sense to do a 10-minute monologue as a recording and transfer it over and then just use it on the show. I don't know. Does that work for people? There's people in the chat room. Who've we got? Mitzi, Omega Logos, and Mist 139 is in there somewhere. So I don't know whether that's a good idea or not.
I'm guessing you guys prefer live shows, but I want to mix and match it a little bit. So if I can record 10-minute segments, it kind of takes the pressure off a little bit, because I run out of things to say. You've heard many, many shows, so you know I run out of things to say. But I'm all right for about 10 minutes, and then I start to dry up. But if I can do 10 minutes on a specific topic, I think that's fine. I can record that and use it in the show later on. And the other thing I'm doing at the moment, which is a change to the format potentially, is I'm asking people when I meet them, if I put a microphone in front of you, will you talk? And I've asked 4 people so far, and they've all said yes, depending on the topic. They're happy to talk into a microphone. So what that means is I might end up doing a bit of a round table kind of situation. If I can coordinate these 4 people plus a couple of others maybe, then there's potential for a round table, but it'll have to be recorded. And it'll either be from the Tipsy Cow or from Destination 1850 or from somewhere local that people agree to, because it's going to be hard enough getting everybody in the same place at the same time. I don't want to worry about the venue as well. So it'll have to be somewhere where people are already gathering, which I think is going to end up being the Tipsy Cow, which is my local gay bar, drag bar, one of the bars around the corner. So it'll be interesting. It's all new territory. Obviously, I've done round tables before, but it's over Skype. So Skype round tables are good because I can pull people in, but doing it from outside of a bar is also going to be an interesting experience. We'll see how that comes along. It may or may not happen. It may or may not work. I think people are wanting to have kind of a veto power over it as well. So we'll see. We'll see if it works and how it works. Let's have a look. I've got some Wayne Dyer to play that I thought was pretty good. So this is about 20 minutes. And then we'll say hello to the chat room again. Here we go. This is 22 minutes of Wayne Dyer.
These top 10 principles that I have put together here for this program. The first of these principles came from a Vedantic scholar in the 10th century. His name was Tilopa. And this first principle says, as Tilopa put it, have a mind that is open to everything and attached to nothing. One of the central principles of my life is that no one knows enough to be a pessimist about anything. That each and every one of us, when we close our mind to what is possible for us or what is possible for humanity, closes off the genius that resides and lives in each and every one of us. Having an open mind doesn't necessarily mean finding fault with all of the things that you've been taught by others. It means opening yourself up to the potentiality and the possibility that anything and everything is possible. So having a mind that is open to everything and attached to nothing really means finding within ourselves the ability to get rid of a trait that I find so common in the contemporary world. Do you know that most people that I meet spend their lives looking for occasions to be offended? They actually are out there hoping that they can find some reason to be offended. And there's no shortage of reasons. They're out there everywhere. The way this person dressed, the what this person said, they turn on their TV, they hear the news, they're offended by this, someone used language that they didn't like, someone doesn't share the same customs as you, and all day long. In fact, if you keep track tomorrow, you will find probably 100 reasons that you can go around being offended. But a mind that is open to everything and attached to nothing is a mind that says, I'm never looking for anything to be offended by. And that whatever anybody else out there has to say, my response to that is, that's an interesting point of view. I've never considered that before. Hey, it's Evan Carl. Only Wayne Dyer. Enjoy. I remember being interviewed for a morning television show, and the woman that was interviewing me said, how does it feel to be talking to audiences where people have all of these strange beliefs, these weird things that they come to. And it intrigues me because one of the things that Emerson said is in one of his very first essays, he says, the first thing we have to say respecting what are called new views here in New England, where we are right now, is that they are not new. But the very oldest of thoughts cast into the mold of these new times. That was in 1842. He was speaking about that. And this woman asked me the question. She said, doesn't it offend you that there's people out there and they're talking about people using crystals to heal somebody? And I remember my response. My response was that if I've got hemorrhoids and somebody out there is convincing me that crystals are going to heal them, I'm ordering crystal chairs. Why not? I mean, all you have to do is understand something called a placebo. And what is a placebo? It's nothing more than a convincing belief. If I hand you this pill and say, this pill is going to cure your arthritis, and you take it, and the pill is just a sugar pill, but your arthritis disappears, I'm into buying those placebos. Where can I get some of those placebos? And it's true of everything. And it's when you think about all the things that we enjoy and what our life is like, it took people who had a mind that wasn't closed to allow us to make the progress that we've made. Progress is impossible if you always do things the way you've always done things. But the other word in this, what Talopa said, is be attached nowhere. Be attached nowhere. Attachment really means I am deluding myself into a belief that if I can't have or if I can't do this or that thing, then somehow I'm going to become immobilized. So an open mind that is detached. In one of, in my most recent book, In a Spiritual Solution to Every Problem, I have an observation. And it's an observation from Anthony DeMello, man I respect enormously, a priest, who, in The Way to Love, puts it this way. Here's a great test for your relationships, especially the relationships that you're in with those whom you love, not your children, but your spouses and your lovers and so on. Try this test on for size. One, I am not really attached to you at all. I am merely deluding myself into the belief that without you, I will not be happy. And two, and here's the toughest test for non-attachment. I leave you free to be yourself, to think your thoughts, indulge your tastes, follow your inclinations, behave in ways that you decide are to your liking. How's that for a challenge? And so what most of us do in our relationships and why they are not as successful as we would like them to be is that we become attached and we tell ourselves that if this person behaves in a way that I find offensive, then I can't be happy. I make my happiness, my fulfillment dependent upon those people that I love being what I think that they should be. And detachment doesn't mean being a victim. It just simply means I know that I can make my life fulfilled and happy by having a mind that is open to everything and attached nowhere. The second principle is a very simple principle. It says you can't give away what you don't have. Now, it sounds ridiculous, okay? But it's more than what meets the ear as you hear this. You can't give away what you don't have. People who are not good at giving away love can't give away love because they don't have it to give away. If I want to give you a dozen oranges, I can't give you those dozen oranges unless I go out and pick up 12 oranges someplace. Otherwise, all it is just empty rhetoric. And the same thing is true of virtually everything in your life. You can't give away love for others if you don't have love in here to give away. If what you have in here is contempt, If what you have in here is anger, if what you have in here is fear, then these are the things you're going to be giving away in your life. And I've often thought, and I really believe very strongly that there's a law, sort of a law in the universe. I call it the law of attraction. And the law of attraction is one that works like this. You get back from the universe, from the world, what it is that you put out there in the world. And if you're putting out there into the world that I am not worthy of attracting something beautiful into my life, that the universe will respond back to you with exactly that message. And there are people who come to me and who came to me for years when I had my own counseling practice and so on, and they would say to me, I just keep attracting the same kind of people, the same kind of events, the same kind of losers into my life. Why is that? Why do I keep doing that? And I keep attracting an absence of abundance. I just can't seem to attract abundance into my life. I'm always behind the eight ball. I'm never getting ahead. And I suggested to them, I said, did it ever occur to you that that's the very kind of message you're sending out to the world and out to the universe? That the ocean of abundance is there. And you can go to that ocean of abundance. And you can take a Mack truck and you can fill it up 20 times a day and take it out of there, and guess what? It doesn't impact at all the ocean of abundance. It doesn't even go down a zillionth of an inch. It's unlimited. Or you can go to the same ocean of abundance with a eyedropper, and you can just take this much out once a month and say, that's all that seems to be available for me. And the interesting thing for me is that when people go to this ocean of abundance, this unlimited world, all that I have is thine, it says in the holy books. All that I have is thine. It's all there for you. But if you believe inside that it's limited, that you can only get so much, that other people are going to get it before you do, then you'll find yourself creating that very same thing. And the even more interesting part about this, you can't give away what you don't have principle, is that if your message to the universe is gimme, 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 which is a lot of people's message to the universe, I want this from you, I want that from you, please give me this, I have to have that, that's what their prayer is like, that's what their message is, you know, and they say, I want this from the universe, gimme, gimme, gimme. The universe's response back to that kind of a mentality is exactly the same. The universe will say right back to you over and over again, gimme, gimme, gimme. And you'll find yourself never, ever arriving, but always being in a state of striving, always feeling as if you're being neglected, never feeling as if you have enough, always feeling as if you're being shortchanged, because you're constantly under the pressure to give, to get back what the universe is demanding from you. And the interesting thing about all of this, the irony of this, is that if you shift that and you say to the universe, to the world, how may I serve? How may I serve? The universe's response back to you is, how may I serve you? How may I serve you? And it's very intriguing. When you take your energy and your attention off of what you are demanding from the world, and instead saying, what can I give to the world? And it's really the basis behind that very famous line of the President John Kennedy's inaugural address. Ask not what your country can do, ask what you can do for your country. And the irony of that is, and I've learned that in my own life, that when I stopped thinking about what was in it for Wayne Dyer and how much could I get, and I began to shift and say, how can I help you? How can I give to you? What can I do for you? And people who write to me, I send them something. When I encounter somebody that needs help of some kind, I'm very often just giving that to them. And then I find that it just keeps coming back into my life. And once I shifted that energy off of what can I have into what can I give, it seemed to me that the universe responded back with the very same message. What can I give to you? And the most incredible and wonderful and beautiful abundance has flowed into my life in every way that I can possibly think of. You can't give away what you don't have. So take a look at an inventory of what you do have. How much do you love yourself? How much kindness do you have in you? How much peace do you have in you? How much joy do you have in you? And if you're able to give that away as many times as you can in a given day, watch and see how much more of that continues to show up and come back in your life. Okay? The third principle is one of my very favorites. It's called, there are no justified resentments. And this is a very difficult principle for many people to get, but one that I believe very strongly. I was in a group one time of drug addicts and alcoholics. And I was one of the people that was a sponsor and leading this group. And the sign on the wall said, there are no justified resentments in this group. And what I said to that group that night was, no matter what anybody says to you here, no matter what kind of anger comes directed towards you, no matter how much hate you may encounter showing up in your life, there are no justified resentments. Meaning that if you carry around resentment inside of you about anything or about anyone, and I'm talking about the person that you lent money to and hasn't paid you back, I'm talking about the person in your life that you feel was abusive in your life, I'm talking about the person who walked out on you and left you for somebody else, I'm talking about all of the things that you have justified in your heart and in your life that you have the right to be resentful about, and I'm suggesting to you that those resentments will always end up harming you and creating in you a sense of despair. I've often said that no one ever dies from a snake bite. The snake bite will never kill you. You cannot be unbitten. Once you're bitten, you're bitten. But it's the venom that continues to pour through your system after the bite that will end up destroying you. So now you have to take a look at all of the resentments that you may have in your life. And I'd like to suggest to you that I think there is a wonderful metaphor for this that I have created in my life for how to make this work. And I think that Regis Philbin is the one who's responsible for it. All right? My buddy Regis. There's a show called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire that has been popular all over the world. I'm in South Africa, it comes on. All right. I was in Australia, and they've got their own Australian version. And in Greece, they have the Greek edition of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. And basically, this show has two levels that you have to get to. Now, the first level is the $1,000 level. And at the $1,000 level, you basically have to answer a question like, on your hand, you have some digits. Those digits on your hand are called your feet, your nose, your ears, your fingers. And everybody, whoever goes on the show, has this horrible dread that they're going to go out on one of those questions, right? So basically, in order to get to the $1,000 level, all you have to do is answer five pretty simple questions in order to get to the $1,000 level. Now, on this program, the $1,000 level for you in this metaphor means that you will leave with something if you get this. At least get this. This is the $1,000 level. You must send blame out of your life for any conditions of your life. Blame has to go. All right. Now, blame means if you're sitting there with a disease, you say without guilt, it's mine, I take responsibility for it. This means that if you have been through any tough circumstances in your life, this means if you have a minimal amount of financial security in your life, this means if your children don't get along with you, This means that if your neighbors are taking up a petition to get you out of the neighborhood, whatever it might be that's going on in your life, you name it, and everybody across this great country and across this world has a series of these things that you're willing to say, I am here because of the choices that I have made right now. I'm willing to say that. Even though it's difficult, and we know it's really not your fault. We know really there's a lot of people out there who are really bad, all right? But you're willing to say no blame. That's the first level, all right? That's where you understand no justified resentment. And then on the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire show, there is what is called the $32,000 level. And the $32,000 level is not only an opportunity for you to walk away with a sizable amount of goodies, which you can walk away from tonight in this program, but it also is the door opener to multi-wealth. But you got to get to this in order to have an opportunity to move into these transcendent levels, all right? Millionaire spiritual status. All right, you got to get through these next five questions. And this $32,000 question, or level rather, comes to this. It came to me from a quotation that I used in the writing of A Spiritual Solution to Every Problem. I read the book that was written a couple of thousand years ago by Patanjali, the Yoga Sutras, the aphorisms of Patanjali. And one of those sutras, one of those aphorisms, observations that this brilliant man made almost 2,000 years ago was this. He said, if you become steadfast in your abstentions of thoughts of harm directed towards others, all living creatures will cease to feel enmity in your presence. Now, this translates to blame, pretty basic. No more blame. I'm just not going to assign responsibility to other people for where I am, because now I have an opportunity to get rid of it. If I think someone else caused it, then I've got to wait for somebody else to change in order for me to get rid of it, and you might wait forever for that. But if I take responsibility for it, I can do something, including move on, which might be the most important thing to do. But at the higher level, when there are no justified resentments, what you are doing is what St. Francis did, Francesco. What you are doing is you are at a place where you are sending love in response to hate. You are literally saying, no matter what comes my way, I am going to be steadfast in my abstention of thoughts of harm directed toward others. I'm going to work hard at, no matter what comes my way, having it come out of me what I want to come out of me, and that is love, and that is a higher energy. And if you can get to that level, Patanjali said, all living creatures will cease to feel enmity in your presence. I have a little girl, a precious little girl. I have six precious girls and two precious sons, but I have a little girl who is almost 12. And she loves animals like no one I've ever met in my life. I mean, her whole life revolves around animals. And when we walk in the woods, butterflies avoid me, fly away from people around, and they come and they land right on her arm. And it happens all the time. All living creatures, she couldn't have a thought of harm directed towards any living creature. And Patanjali said to us, all living creatures will cease to feel fear or enmity or anger in the presence of those who can send love in response to hate. That's what I mean when I say there are no justified resentments. What I'd like to do, I'd like to share a little story here with you. It's a very tender story. It was sent to me by someone.
All right, that's about as far as we can go with that clip, I think. I don't know about the butterflies, but I'm strangely attractive to Jack Russells at the moment. There's a Jack Russell who's one of the regulars in the bar that
that I was talking about, the Tipsy Cow. And he's an old dog, 14. The guy that was looking after him died last year of a heart attack. And he moved on to somebody else looking after him. And he's a tough cookie. He's a very tough cookie, is Toby. But he's taken a liking to me for some reason. I've got a potential dog sitting job coming up as a result of talking to this dog like it's human. I mean, literally, this dog is human. There's no doubt about it. It doesn't behave like a dog at all. Never once has Toby licked my face or licked my arm or anything. But if you're sitting there and you have a conversation with him, he'll tell you what he wants. He'll tell you what he's thinking. Totally human, very, very human. And if you respect him like he's human, he'll behave. If you treat him like a dog, he's not interested. So that's a potential job coming up in April, I think, beginning of April. So I need to time, if I'm going to do another call centre job, I need to time it so that it doesn't coincide with my job my dog sitting job. And we'll see how that goes. There's potential for all of these things. See, I'm sitting in a world full of potential. I need to find a way to develop some of these things so that they produce an income. So the podcasting so far, the podcasting hasn't produced me an income. Radio show hasn't really produced me an income. The show that I'm doing with Chris Wilson potentially might produce me a new laptop. He's offered to buy me a new laptop. So that's sitting there waiting to happen. And that's partly the arrangement. It's all free. It's all about freedom of speech. Chris has got things he wants to share. I've got a platform and he can share them on there. But there has to be some kind of exchange going on. And that's what's emerged as the exchange. After a couple of months, we've done three or four shows now, me and Chris, and all I'm doing is introducing him, and then he takes over. And the shows are on the podcast feed. So if you go to Podbean, it's radioprojects.podbean.com. That's the place to sign up and subscribe to that show. You can find it on Spotify and on Google Podcasts and on Player FM and all of those types of places. And on TuneIn. All of those types of places. If you look for Free Association Radio Show Podcast and Roundtable, or Roundtable Radio Show and Podcast, or any combination of those words, we'll find it. And if you like what you hear, please share it with your friends. Tell people about it. If it's going to build up into something, then I need as many people as possible sharing it. And I can't do that on my own. I talk about it endlessly, but I can only do so much on my own. I need the universe to help me with this stuff. I can't do it by myself. So I've kind of reversed how I was doing things just to see how that works. So I'm now just asking people if they want to talk. Rather than me talking, I'm just presenting people the opportunity to talk. So I'm giving people the opportunity that I've had with Lenny and Karen's show and with Revolution Radio and with the podcast, where I've got some things off my chest. I've messed about with formats a little bit, but I've said what I want to say along the way, and it all kind of builds up into something. In the end, it'll build up into something. It's just I'm not quite seeing it yet. And Revolution Radio is entirely listener supported, so we do need your help. There are two studios running almost 24 hours a day, So Studio A runs pretty much all the time. Studio B is about 18 hours a day. And then you've got the Hawk's Nest, which is intermittent. I do my experimenting on the Hawk's Nest. So Technocratic Tyranny Blues hasn't really happened for a couple of months. But I'm going to rearrange things and find a different slot for it, and then see if I can experiment with another show format on there. And then when I find one that works, that I'm prepared to do once a week, then I'll transfer it over onto Studio B. But I want to play with it. If I want to play with formats, I do that on the Hawk's Nest, because I think it's only fair to do the playing and the developing in a place that isn't the main scheduler. Well, for me, at least. It means I can make mistakes and not worry about it, and just play and see what works for me. So the new round table might end up on the Hawk's Nest as part of that. Not quite sure yet, but we'll see. Let's have a look at BitChute. Just see what's going on with BitChute. 2 seconds, let me just work out what I'm doing with this. This is turning to live radio again, which means that if I get too close to the microphone, I get feedback, so I better not do that. Ooh, that sounds like feedback to me. So I'm going to have a look at the entertainment category just for the last 10 minutes or so of the show to see what's in there. Oh, here's the thing. I wanted to talk about Robert Malone as well a little bit. I've just reminded myself by seeing a picture of Robert Malone on BitChute. So I listened to an interview that he did. I nearly used some of it on the show, but I was a bit concerned because he was talking about fifth generation warfare, fifth generation asymmetrical warfare, which is kind of the combination of propaganda and biological warfare and chemical warfare and infiltration and all of those types of things that have basically got no ethics attached to them. But I'm a bit concerned about Robert Malone because he's using China as kind of a scapegoat for everything. He's moved on from blaming Fauci to blaming China. And I'm a little bit concerned because everybody seems to be using China as a punch bag at the moment. And if it keeps on going, then the USA will talk itself into a war. And it won't have anything to do with China. It'll have a lot to do with the US talking itself into a war, and very little to do with China. So that's something I'm a little bit concerned about. I think probably in 5 years' time, we'll know whether or not we're going to war with China. So it's a bit early to tell. But if you look at the number of stories recently that had China involved in them, it becomes an issue. It becomes an issue when it's the media building a story and then the alternative media building the same story. The same narrative is coming from two different places, which makes me suspicious of it. Because when Robert Malone is mainstream, admittedly, he's a very well connected into government, very well connected into the CIA, all of those things. So he could be being used, or he's been reading, and he talks. He's a lecturer. He's a pathology lecturer. He's a university lecturer. So when he's reading things, he uses them as material when he's talking in interviews, if he thinks they're valid. So I can understand that he's been reading about asymmetric warfare, but then Why use China as the example? That concerns me. Concerns me a lot. Because we've only just got the point where the media doesn't need to use Russia as an example anymore. But for the last, 8 years, Russia was the example. So that's how long it took to go from people using Russia as a scapegoat, naming Russia as an adversary, to a kinetic war with Russia. It took 7 years. So if it takes the same amount of time with China, in 6 or 7 years, we're going to know whether there's a war with China or not. So that concerns me. That's nothing to do with the entertainment category on BitChute, but it did prompt me. So let's have a quick look. I don't know where that squeaking's coming from. Ooh. Right, so there's not that many TV shows on here anymore. I think they've had a clear out of all the channels that were uploading series or old TV or old movies. They've all pretty much gone, from what I can see. But not to worry, there's other stuff on BitChute that's interesting. The High Wire is always interesting. I watch Redacted pretty much every night now. The other guy that I'm watching pretty much religiously is Glenn Greenwald on Rumble. It's a bit late for me. It's midnight my time, but I'm usually wide awake at midnight anyway. I have trouble not being wide awake at 2 o'clock in the morning usually. So Glenn Greenwald is kind of how I unwind to try and get to sleep. But he's doing some very, very good content. And it's not like snippets and news comments about the news is not what he does. He'll do a full show about one issue that's in the news and give you a history and context and all of those things that a good journalist does. And that's probably between Redacted and Glenn Greenwald and a little bit of Russell Brand here and there. I'm not really using BitChute all that much now. I'm much more kind of Rumble and YouTube as my sources of information. So the way I'm looking at the world shifted when I moved away from BitChute, really, and when YouTube's changed their terms of service, so you can talk a little bit more now, which you still can't talk without thinking about it, but you can talk a little bit more on YouTube now. And they're covering their back because there's probably a lawsuit coming from somebody about the constitutional issues of restricting freedom of speech. So I don't know. That might not ever happen, but it's a possibility. They're obviously covering themselves by changing the terms of service and making them looser. So we're coming up to the end of the show now. Just a reminder, you can find me all over the place online. So Podbean is where I do my live shows during the week. Pop-up shows. So if you want to know when I'm live on Podbean, you have to subscribe and you have to really download the app onto your smartphone. So there's a limited amount you can do on Podbean with the website. You can listen, but you can't comment. So you can hear what I'm doing, but you can't actually interact with me unless you've got a smartphone with a Podbean app on there. But once you've downloaded the app, they'll give you 5 hours of free shows or whatever it is. So you can try it out. I like it. I tried loads of different places for podcasting, and Podbean was the best out of the ones I tried. And they're constantly advertising to bring new people in, which means there's a throughput of new people who potentially might sign up for your podcast. So they're doing the lead generation for you, in effect. So to me, that's a good deal. For 10,
£10 a month I'm paying them. But I get a good deal because it's a solid, sensible way of running a podcast. And I know there's going to be new people coming in all the time. So I don't have to do as much lead generation. I don't have to. I'm always going to tell people about it, but I don't have to do as much because I know Podbean are going to do a certain amount of that themselves. So there's all of that. I'm on Rumble. I'm on BitChute. I've just set up a new channel on Brand New Tube, which looks like it's back up and running again. I'm not going to do any live streams, but I'll upload some videos on there and see if I get a response. And if you are online, if you want to take part in the round tables, send me an email to freeassociationradioshow@protonmail.com and let me know what you want to talk about and which platforms you're on and how we connect. And if you can get onto Podbean, then we can just have a conversation there. If not, Zoom or Skype or one of those places. All right, that's it for now. I hear the music. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week. Have a good week.
It's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
There have been imaginative science fiction writers for generations.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
I'm aware of some archaeologists that have uncovered large bones indicating giants in Virginia. Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. There were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford. Join me every Thursday night in Studio A at 6 p.m. Eastern for Factor Theory Live. Find us on www.revolution.radio. Great guests and great stories.
What do you believe?
I am Bill Johnson. Some consider my efforts to be an underground law school. I am not an attorney, and I do not give legal advice. I teach. That's lawful and legal. Consider yourself served. You are to appear Wednesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern, Studio A. My forte? Foreclosure and contract law. Grab your legal pad and pen. Learn a broad spectrum of law spanning administrative, criminal, family, tort, and federal law. Fools and losers cling to old cases. I dissect and comment on the latest rulings.